Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and welcome to The Miracle Within You, a show at the intersection of psychology, medicine, and spirituality that considers how the mind and body interact with each other to influence health and healing. With years of experience as a practicing psychologist in the health and wellness fields, and as a writer covering amazing stories of healing, I will explore with my guests how numerous factors influence our lives and our health. Thank you for listening. In this edition of The Miracle Within You, I'm delighted to have on the show Wyatt Palumbo. He is the founder of the Lifestyle Healing Institute, which is based here in the USA in Florida. And Wyatt has a lot of interesting things to say about the mind-body connection and the work that he has done using his particular philosophy. Wyatt, great to have you with us.
Thanks a lot for having me, Howard.
Yes, as a pleasure as always. So, kick off, let's tell the listeners a bit about you and how you get to be what you're doing today.
Sure. Yeah. To me, the journey into this field was through my own life experiences. I had a lot of difficulty when I first went off to college at 18 with significant GI issues, lost a bunch of weight, ended up ballooning into sleep issues and other aspects of things that found me in a conventional model through different practitioners. And it was a very hard battle for me for a while to kind of get my health on track. And through that journey, through my own health, is essentially how I established Lifestyle Healing Institute to try and help other people that had the same sorts of struggles that I had growing up.
Okay. And did conventional medicine help you much, or what did you learn?
In some ways it did. And in other ways, you know, frankly, I felt like it made me, you know, worse in certain regards. You know, I think, you know, testing was helpful for me. They found certain things that I don't think you otherwise would have found without conventional testing methods. And there were times that I felt like, you know, I needed a medication to help bridge the gap in my own life with whatever, what was going on. And then in other ways, you know, they prescribe so many medications and so many almost kind of seemingly guessing at what was happening that, you know, it put me into a very tough position for a while as well. So, you know, I'm a believer that, you know, all sorts of medicine have something to offer, but that, you know, you need to kind of find out what that may be for you.
Yes. Yeah. Just out of interest, how many medications? What were the most number of medications?
So they cycled me through 17 medications in 6 months with 7 different doctors.
Oh my gosh.
And before they found that there were other things happening, I ended up having a pituitary tumor, adenoma. It was producing, it's called acromegaly, and it was producing a high amount of growth hormone in my pituitary in the brain, causing all sorts of symptoms and very not a lab that you would typically run if you're having mental health symptoms or GI symptoms. You wouldn't really think to run growth hormone in these other areas. So it took them a while to find some of the root causes of this. You know, there was stress involved and other that type of stuff too. But for the most part, it took them a while to find this, and they thought it was other things for a while, clearly, which really that's the piece, you know, frankly, that made me feel worse was just this carousel. And they were misdiageses, you know, when push came to shove, they ended up being, you know, inaccurate.
Yeah. Now, when you were referred, were you to other people, or did somebody give you a diagnosis and you weren't comfortable or happy with it? I'm just thinking of somebody else going through this might just have accepted what the first doctor said, and I wondered.
Yeah, totally. You know, first I kind of went into my primary care, you know, the first line of defense, and just kind of explain what was going on. And over a 3-week period, I had lost 17 pounds, and it was really hard for me to keep food down. And I'm a pretty, you know, kind of thin frame as is. So that was going on. And then there was also me starting college and other stuff. So I went to my primary, and you know, he thought it was essentially stress related, which frankly, you know, makes sense. And I'm sure that was a component, you know, in hindsight. But so he prescribed an antidepressant to help with that. And that is what really got things going, because that didn't work for me. And then they referred me to psychiatry, psychology. Then it was over to cardiology and just kind of bouncing around from there. And for me, the biggest discussion was what you said. It just, it, I knew that my mental health was struggling, and I knew that stress was a component. I knew that I could improve that, but I also knew that there was something else going on that, you know, I couldn't just switch on and off like that and have all these symptoms like that either. So I kind of was persistent on going deeper with this, in addition to, you know, being bounced around a bunch in between.
And so where did this whole journey take you in terms of your personal development and career?
Sure. So then, you know, once I kind of got my health on track, you know, I felt like the way I was treated, that I probably wasn't alone, that there was people that probably had other symptoms that maybe looked like GI or looked like immune or looked like mental health, but maybe weren't. And so I really wanted to make it a mission to help people in a way that, you know, someone like me wouldn't fall through the cracks. Because at 18, you know, I had my whole life ahead of me. Like if my path went a different way, it's scary to think about where it could go if you don't get your health on track. So I wanted to essentially give people the opportunity to have their health get on track through a different methodology. And what I ended up doing was going to school for chemical engineering and using a lot of the chemical and biomedical background to create testing panels that would establish a little bit more of what's going on from a chemical perspective, and using that as a first line of defense, as opposed to just talking or not using enough standardized testing. And from there, I ended up actually patenting that method and system, and then founding the actual clinic to deliver those services.
Yeah, and that's so, so important, isn't it? Because, okay, somebody presents, I'm stressed or I'm depressed. Okay, well, you could just stop there. Say, oh, well, just give them an anxiolytic or an antidepressant. But when you consider the mind-body is a total connected system, first of all, that stress is going to resonate throughout their body, and that depression is going to resonate. What else is it doing? And then looking at it the other way, what is going on in their body to make them feel like this? And just taking the first symptom, particularly a psychological symptom, at face value and treating that is potentially missing so much, right?
I totally agree with you. And that's essentially the basis of our entire practice of the last 10 years. It's not that the root cause is always physical or always mental or always all these things. It's that it could be a lot of factors, and that more than likely it is a lot of factors, and that the body's essentially always going to have some sort of contribution. Your lifestyle is always going to have some sort of contribution. Your mind, all of it's going to have some contribution. And it's, as a clinician, I feel like it's our job to determine what are the driving forces behind that. But there's not one person that we've seen over the last 10 years that doesn't have something in the body or doesn't have something in the mind or both, right? So we start with this nice testing panel that kind of hits different levels, going from immunity to the brain, to hormones, to inflammatory values, and trying to find out where the body may need some help, and where you could come up with essentially a better picture of this illness.
Yep. I do believe that is critical, and I do believe it's I wouldn't say a failure, but a weakness in the conventional medical system, where people aren't trained to look, or even want to test for more complex, dive deeper into physical and psychological, because it's just too easy. Somebody comes in feeling not quite right. Yeah, they're probably not going to be very happy about not feeling right. So there's going to be some stress and maybe some depression, but that doesn't mean it's That's the main cause. And again, it's a function of this incredible intercellular communication that we have within us that makes it so complicated.
Definitely. And I think that one, you know, study that came out and is used by a lot of people in terms of biases in the way we think is how much information the body can process and how much we can consciously process. And it's so drastic how much information is happening in the background and constantly and when we're sleeping that, you know, the more we can take cues from that, I think the better off we are. And the more we can really understand how our beliefs and our thoughts are forming around these aspects, not only of our health, but really our not only our illness, but our health overall.
And everything, yeah. So, you know, the mind-body is processing about 11 million bits of information a second. Consciously, we can only do about 30 bits.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. That's the that's the study that really, to me, just puts it all in perspective on this cellular communication, what's leading the way, and almost that, you know, how much your thoughts and beliefs are intertwined with the body and these cells. It's almost impossible to separate that when there's that much information happening at that speed.
Absolutely. And that subconscious level. And we, I think for the most part, overrate consciousness and think that anything that's important will be conscious. And I just don't think the evidence is there for that. It's almost like consciousness follows behind this amazing complexity that's going on underneath.
It sure seems that way. It's like the that's leading the way, quote unquote, you know, and it's a byproduct of it to a degree, just because of what you said, you know, there. And when you're getting, when the body is showing it on a diagnosable test or the mind on a standardized test or whatever it is, it means that these cells and this information has been there for quite some time before that. I mean, to get actual stress and damage that shows up on a blood test or a standardized test means that, you know, there's quite a lot that's already occurred trillions of times a second, far before, usually, you know, years, if not decades before you're really seeing this happen. So I'm with you on that, that we're not really feeling that, you know, you're feeling when it shows up on the test, when I'm going into the doctor, you know, I'm not feeling, oh, this one cell missed the mark, you know, one time and it could lead to this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't have the brain capacity to even process anywhere close to all of this information. We just don't have it. And we're nowhere near it. You know, we'd have to have, I don't know, you know, 1,000 times bigger, more complex brains that could process consciously.
I agree. And that Dr. Anil Seth, who's pretty big with consciousness research, you know, talks a lot about essentially that we're like prediction machines, because you can't possibly process that information all that well in that amount of time with all that's happening. You know, I think if I'm right, it takes about 2 seconds from the signal from your foot to reach your brain. But I can move my foot and react to the hot stove if I stepped on it, quote unquote, a lot earlier than that. Okay. So there's a lot of prediction mechanisms that happen. And that's where I think it gets really interesting with the mind-body connection, because you essentially have thoughts and beliefs that are already there, whether you're aware of them already, they're already making predictions around all these things happening all the time.
Yeah. And there is some debate about the research. A lot of it does show that you make movements before you're consciously aware of making the movement. So that movement has been initiated. Pull your hand off this hot stove before you think, oh, I got to pull. We can't think that quickly enough. And this amazing interconnection in the mind-body is working way, way faster than we can appreciate. And so that leads to some really, really, I think, important things which you, through Lifestyle Healing Institute, have generated and practice. And we'll get to that after we have this short break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You. I'm talking with Wyatt Palumbo, the founder of the Lifestyle Healing Institute. We were talking about the complexity of the mind-body and how that can blind us to many things. And Wyatt, you were talking about how you had patented a variety of different testing. Tell us a bit about that and then how that has been used.
Sure. So it's essentially like a method and system approach to certain medical conditions. And it starts by, you know, as I mentioned, with this kind of baseline testing. And we do that from a chemical level, from, as I said, some hormones, immune markers, inflammatory markers and things that are readily available at, you know, any sort of blood work that you can do. And then also the standardized testing for the mind and anxiety and depression. And we essentially get a baseline group of testing to see where you are. And then from there, we layer in an approach to meet all those needs. And so some people show up on that they need more from an emotional side, a mental side, a lifestyle side, motor assessments we do, lifestyle gauges we do. We even do simple things like do a diet diary, see what you're eating, see what you're doing every day. And we try and overturn all the stones that science has shown are significant contributors to your health. And then we're trying to see, are they significant contributions to your particular illness? So at this point, we know that behavior, environment, lifestyle, chemistry, all these things are huge factors of our health. But not everyone's going to have those exact manifestations. So we essentially try and assess each of those areas as best we can, and then put the right plan in place, whether that's seeing psychology and medical doctors and an acupuncturist, or whether that's, you know, changing your lifestyle and working more with physical therapy and occupational therapy. You know, we have so many different providers available to work with patients. And we're really firm believers that all ships rise with the rising tide, and that if it's a chronic illness, that the likelihood of this being a silver bullet single cause is just really low. So we're trying to look at everything that can be contributing and then try and put you in the best position to succeed.
Yeah, and that's truly great and innovative, because in Western medicine a lot, it does seem to be very siloed. You know, you go to this person, your family doc or whoever, and you expect them, and they expect just to fix it in one go based on their perception. And that it eliminates so many other potential inputs that you are included.
I completely agree with you. That's a huge point to make to me, because, you know, we all want to feel better and you all want to feel better yesterday. So, you know, I'd love it if you could, everyone could take a pill and call it a day. But it turns out that, you know, thinking that a pill, for example, can reconcile your chemistry, your upbringing, your behaviors, your environment, all it's a lot to ask. And not only that, but to your point, it handcuffs your ability to help people. So I think the more you look at these things, the more you have to kind of accept almost responsibility, accountability, and ownership over all this, but the more you're going to be able to change. So the less, the more narrow and the more specialties you go, you know, the less I think you're going to be able to help yourself. But at the same time, you may not have as much responsibility in that. And so there's an appeal and a comfort level to that, but it kind of leaves you stuck at, this is the only avenue I have to help. You know, if I go to the cardiologist, it's a heart thing, but the brain communicates with the heart, the digestion communicates with the heart, and the immunity communicates with the heart. So it could be a lot of things. So we're firm believers in maximizing the potential of what's happening, but then maximizing obviously the potential to help you and setting up that holistic plan that reflects all that testing that we ran.
Yes. So I think, again, so important as we really understand more and more, you certainly can see how conventional medicine from sort of deterministic principles evolved over time. But I think we've reached a point in time with our knowledge, our experience to know that's very limiting.
It is. And it's interesting because it's led to a lot of great impacts, but almost in a dissected viewpoint, right? Because it's like the cardiologist is over here, the neurologist is over here, the psychologist is over here, and they're rarely in one facility. Like you only get that if you go to the ER or, you know, some crazy comprehensive health clinic that costs a bunch of money. So it's not really done on the level that patients are going to enter into healthcare, which is primary care. And the left hand's not talking to the right hand. And what's really kind of, I think, the exclamation point on that is that's not the way the body does it. You know, the body is not a dissected piece where the heart doesn't communicate with the rest of these things. So everything is done as the sum of all parts in the body working together. And I think for healthcare to represent that better, I think would really serve patients well. I mean, it's essentially representing the way the body actually works. It's a holistic system from the cellular level to the system level to the organ level to mind, body, and spirit, all these things happening. So to me, healthcare needs to reflect that in order to help people at its best, you know, as opposed to being so narrow.
So obviously you do this testing across all of these sectors to try to determine what's functioning well, what isn't functioning, right? And how they might be interconnected, and then work on the systems that seem to be showing problems, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So that could involve you know, any specialty at all or several specialties.
Yes. And it usually does. You know, it usually, again, we're firm believers in all ships rise with the rising tide, and that you didn't get here from just one thing. So we need to reflect that in your treatment program. So there's not really one person that comes in. It's like, you only need this one therapy and that's all you're going to need, or you only need to see this one person. And so we try our best to make it available in one practice so people can make it happen easier for themselves. But there's not been one person that only has one contribution to a chronic illness. It's so many factors, so many genetic interactions that you're best served to create a holistic plan. And we hear the word holistic and you just rush to think alternative or voodoo medicine. And it's really just acknowledging that the mind and the body are connected, that your lifestyle matters, your mind matters, your beliefs matter, your chemistry matters, that it all matters, and that we're here as one unit, not this dissected view. So I think healthcare is moving in that direction. I think it's slower than we probably would all like, but I think at the same time, there's a lot of research showing that is the case. I mean, they now know that all neurodegenerative conditions are also autoimmune conditions. They came out recently and showed schizophrenia has a huge autoimmune component to it. Even that I saw a study on Parkinson's that, you know, there's a low-grade Epstein-Barr virus that's showing up in a lot of people with Parkinson's, and this almost a background infection that's happening for over 30, 40 years, like beach erosion. So the more science comes out, the more interconnected things are, and that's how you can help people. And we've had cases where people come in with neurodegenerative diseases, and we're not going to cure them, and we're not going to claim to cure them by any means, but it's very widely accepted that the brain is under an excited state and it's burning through its chemistry. It's called excitotoxicity. And they also know that inflammation is a huge component for neurodegeneration. They also know the environment is really big. They also know how you're moving in space. So your sensations, your gait, how you're moving around and interacting with your body. So are those the cures? No, but are those factors of the illness? Yes. Are those paths forward for an incurable condition? Yes. And to me, that's what we hope to deliver to patients, is the belief and the understanding that the science actually shows you can feel better even if you can't cure your disease. Yeah. That's the big one to me. And that's the piece that I would love everyone to know, is that you can definitely feel better even no matter what your condition is, because they're showing that disease is not one noted. It's so many components. And if you can control those, hey, you can get back in the driver's seat of your health and your life, which is where we all want to be.
Absolutely. And this was brought home to me when I was in practice a few years back. On the same day, I saw two guys at different stages of dementia. One guy was in very early stage, and he was actually very lonely, isolated, and miserable. There was a guy who was, if you looked at his, you know, imaging, was much worse off. But he had a very supportive wife, you know, he had a great attitude, and his life was way better than the first guy, even though he was much further down the illness process. And I think that sometimes lost is, well, this isn't just about improving, you know, your scores on a test or whatever. It's about the life you are living. And
totally. I think that actually is not emphasized nearly enough, because what you're bringing up is that the cure for your illness may not be the cure for your quality of life. And that you have more control over your quality of life, that your illness is a part of your quality of life, but that they're two different things, and that the underlying cause of your illness may not be the underlying cause for your quality of life. I think that's a really huge point to make, because one of the coolest studies I saw recently was the one out of Harvard on the largest scale study on happiness. And they followed people for, like, I think it was close to 80, 90 years, generations of people. And they followed doctors and this, and people that went to jail, that became schizophrenic, people that were really successful. And they found that the people that were the most happy were not the people that were the most successful or the people that weren't the most, it was the people that had the most positive relationships in their life. And that you are going to go through ups and downs in life, but the people that had the best quality and the best happiness had positive relationships. And to me, it cemented home not only that, you know, that can happen, but that your quality of life is much more in your control than you think, because quality of life is very geared towards happiness. And so if the largest study in the world said that happiness is largely in your control with who you put in your life and who you surround yourself with and how you want to view life in general, then there's a lot of hope for all of us in terms of feeling better. And I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth by any means, but that sounds like what you're talking about. I mean, his case was much further along from a clinical side of things, yet right. His life looked to appear to be a lot better than the other gentleman.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I really do believe, and kind of the basis of this program, that mindset, including, you know, your relationships, but the mindset you have is so important in healing. Again, because I think that resonates with energy throughout the body. I think it's huge.
I used to think, you know, I ask this question to a lot of people, and I almost could pose it to you as well, but I ask a lot of practitioners that are in the healthcare field, you know, what's the number one thing you could do for an individual? Like, if you could just do one thing, what would it be? And for the first, like, 7-8 years of my career, it was to teach people how to breathe. And I just felt like that's something you could teach. It's easy. You could help people, you know, kind of check in with themselves. A lot of positive benefits. And over the last, I don't know, maybe 5-7 years, I've totally switched that into that you essentially believe in yourself, that you have to have the belief that your body has your back, that that you're going to be okay, that you have more control over this than you think. And I essentially realized that that's a belief system. That's a belief system. And I think the number one thing you can do for somebody is to have them believe in themselves, believe in their body, believe in that they're enough, believe that they can do this, believe they can be okay. And if you can do nothing more than that, then you will positively impact somebody's life. And that to me speaks to what you're saying, because if that's the only thing you do, people are going to feel better.
Yeah. And
that's, is it the only thing? No. Is it the only factor? Absolutely not. But when you comes, push comes to shove, is it changing this one chemical value? Is it finding this one genetic factor? Is it picking this one relationship? Or is it your belief system on life in general and how you want to go about it and who you believe and what you believe and the restrictions you're going to hold on yourself? I really think that if you genuinely believe and you're in yourself and your body is really got your back, that you can really... That's an overnight impact.
No question about that. I like the way you say that. Your body has your back. Yeah, that's that's good. And I think that's true. And again, as I say, the basis of this program really is about that, is the experiences that I've had with some of my clients and people that I know who've made recoveries that didn't seem medically possible. All of them have that one thing in common. Mindset. No, I'm going to be happy, which does speak to the question of medical communication generally. You know, a lot of doctors are very defensive and feel they've got to do everything in the standardized way and not deviate from that. Otherwise, they'll be at risk. And I think that's really, it really limits their potential.
It does. And I think, to be honest, like complementary medicine and alternative medicine don't necessarily help that, because they tend to overclaim things. And so the pseudo claims of that for a conventional community, they almost reject the entire premise because of that, you know, because you're tying so much to it. Like alkaline water, for example, is a great example. It works to do certain things, but it doesn't do all these miracle solutions that people are thinking. So the conventional community rejects it entirely as a solution because of all these attached pseudo claims to it. But at the same time, it doesn't help the patient in the end, you know, feel better. And when you're in it and you're feeling that way, it's really hard to keep that mindset, you know? So I think, as you said, the way we're portraying medicine, the way we can communicate that, I think is a big deal, because when you're in it and you're feeling that, you almost feel like you're the only person in the world experiencing this, and that you, how could you possibly change your mindset? And you know, God almost took a lightning bolt and just cast it on me. And it's like, you know, logically that's not the way it works in the body. It's not the way it works, you know, in our belief systems, but it feels that way. So, you know, I think if we could help people from a medical side of things, and even from an upbringing standpoint, to have this mindset going in, it would just be amazing. Because to get this mindset is very hard, but to have it be ingrained in your being, you know, then it's just second nature.
Absolutely. So when we come back after this commercial break, we'll hear some of your cases as examples of what you do at the Lifestyle Healing Institute after the break.
The station that makes you feel good.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden. Anne and Deck, Fish and Chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You, and today I'm talking with Wyatt Palumbo, founder of the Lifestyle Healing Institute. And Wyatt, you've told us about developing different tools and being an integrative practice. There must be some amazing stories of people who have benefited enormously from your approach.
Well, the one that I was briefly talking about was kind of when we see some of these neurodegenerative cases. And I really think it highlights this pretty well, because all neurodegenerative conditions are incurable. So really your only option is improving quality of life, and you really don't have an avenue towards a cure, at least today. So we had a gentleman, you know, come in here with ALS, over 3 years ago now, and he got the diagnosis, and after the diagnosis developed drop foot, depression, certain symptoms, went on different medications for it. And when he came to us, it was rather interesting, because he said, like, I'm not sure if this progression of my disease is from the disease or if it's from them shattering the existence of my life with this diagnosis. And or, if, you know, and more than likely, it's a combination of things. And so his belief in the way they present this again. So the way they present this is, we're going to see you every 4 months with this particular condition, ALS, until we can't anymore. There's nothing we can do for you. We're just going to keep monitoring you. And they basically give you a death sentence in a single visit and just shatter your existence and then tell you to go home. And it's a very, very, like, it's a very disruptive presentation to me. And I think obviously we can improve upon that. But in his case, he had the condition. It was very diagnosable, did the neurofilament test, everything backed it up. It was very clean, had it at a big name university, and it was very clear. But he also had an undiagnosed condition called hemochromatosis, which is where you store a lot of iron in the blood, and that was inflaming his blood, had nothing to do with the ALS. And he also had liver enzymes that were backing up and showing some inflammation there. And he had the huge autoimmune component to this, which again is incurable, but all things that you know, we now know are treatable and things that we can affect. So we started with our blood work, and that's where it revealed all these things to us. And we saw, oh, wow, these are all these things happening. So we said, hey, can't cure this condition, but we know we can positively treat these. And we know that in all likelihood, you're going to feel that impact in some way in your life. In addition to that, we set him up with a motor assessment, which with a practitioner of ours that is really good at neurodegenerative, is a published author in the Parkinson's neurodegenerative space, in terms of getting the body to be more aware of its sensations and more aware of what's happening around it, so it can improve how it's moving around in space. And long story short, you know, he was given anti-inflammatories and things to reduce the inflammation. We had him give blood for getting rid of the excess iron in the hemochromatosis. And we did our best from an immune standpoint with lifestyle and things that are available to us today. And then he did all of these different functional exercises, and he reversed certain clinical findings within the first 6 months, and even maintained them for up to a year afterwards. And now fast forward 3 years later, 80% of people with that condition are gone within 4 years, 5 years. And he is at the point where some of his inflammatory values are either maintaining or continuing to reverse 3 years later. There's a number of things that are clinically better. Some are the same, and then some are getting worse. And it's all a kind of a whole pot of things together for him. But to me, he was given a death sentence. I was rapidly progressing. And if nothing was done, I'm not sure the impact on what would happen to him and his family. This is all, his whole family is disrupted by this. So long story short, you know, to reverse those findings at all was pretty unheard of. To maintain them for a year or two was even more unheard of. And now we're at 3 years and, you know, he's losing the use of his hand and he's, you know, slower walking around, but he's still driving, taking care of himself, flying, and went on a vacation. He has walked his daughter down the aisle, things that he was preparing to have another friend of his walk his daughter down the aisle after this diagnosis. So for him to be able to do all that, I mean, the quality of life that he received by opening up the toolbox and looking at all the areas to this, the impact it had on him emotionally, all of it, was able to give him a path forward. And that's what I think is empowering about this methodology. And it gives you hope. And the hope is not like fake hope. It's real hope nowadays. The science and the material we have is showing that this hope is grounded. You can get there and you can do this for yourself.
Yeah. And indeed, a side effect of that is the hope. You know, somebody sees, well, I'm feeling better, or I can move better, or what have you. That makes them more positive. That resonates, and it's almost.
I think that's a good point too, because it's kind of like you're in this negative snowball effect when you get these diagnoses and when you have these, like, nothing's working for you, right? Like the body's not working. Then it shatters your mind, and all those things are combining to snowball in a terrible direction. But the converse is true too. If you can get enough momentum in a positive direction, the thoughts, beliefs, the mind, everything comes on board with that too. All of a sudden, you know, that's when I think you can get the essence of where it feels like 1 + 1 = 3. And you're creating that positive momentum by getting it going in the right direction. So the converse is true with that. And I think that is what I think can really give people an avenue forward. Because, you know, as soon as you can get that momentum, that you can almost increase that momentum rapidly.
Yeah, absolutely. It inspires people to follow through with the advice, to, you know, do the best they can lifestyle-wise. You know, it's not just an idea. They've engaged in it.
And you won't do it if you don't feel better either, right? Like he right. made a change to his diet and then noticed that he had, you know, a little bit less joint pain. And, you know, for him, that's his change. You know, I don't know if that's going to, obviously that's not going to happen for everybody. But my point is that it's a feedback loop on this is working, I'm going to do it. So you really do have to create paths forward to help people see that they can feel better. And then that belief system can kind of fall into place a lot easier.
Absolutely. I know you've got many great stories. And that's a good one, because it shows that this wasn't about conventionally, quotation mark, curing somebody, but actually making them much more positive, fixing some things that could be fixed, and generating that hope and belief. I'm sure there are others. Have you got?
The way, you know, our clinic operates, it tends to be, and obviously I prefer to reverse this, but we tend to be the last stop. You know, that they've already seen the primary, they've already seen the specialist, they've already gone and spent money in the alternative world. And so we're kind of usually the last stop. And in a preference, it'd be great if this was almost primary care, but that's a different conversation. So we see people pretty far down the line of this. So a lot of people we see have incurable conditions. And so our path forward is, you know, the only way we could help people, and frankly, the only way we've been around for so long, is that we are able to create progress and an improvement in your quality of life, despite whatever's happening from a disease standpoint. And so we had this individual come in a wheelchair, and she'd said that she'd been in a cane for the previous 5 years and now had to resort to a wheelchair. And it's essentially through chronic pain. She had a condition in her called RSD. It's a very debilitating condition, nerve pain, all these different things. As well as multiple surgeries, kidney disease, hysterectomy history, all these different aspects that have happened to her, a lot of which are irreversible or incurable. And also, this individual is on, over 13 to 15 different medications at one time to manage all these things. It was almost like some things she was on because of the side effect of the other, you know, like... She was on an opiate to manage the pain, and then a constipation med to manage the opiate because of the constipation from that med. So there's a lot of chasing of the tail happening there. And we had a lot of conversations, our psychologist, our MD, our medical director, and it was a lot of discussion on like, really, what do you want to get out of a program like this? Where are you trying to go? And she really made the claim that she didn't want to be dulling her mind anymore with these opiates and these pain medications. And we really had a lot of discussion on essentially that we can get you off those meds and we can do our best to rid you of that, but there's no way that you're not going to be in pain in the future. And there's a difference though between pain and suffering. And so we can reduce the suffering, if not eliminate that. We can free you from some of these medications. We can improve the things that we can improve, but you're still going to be in pain. And there was a crossroads, I remember, at about 3 or 4 weeks in her treatment when she was just about off of methadone, which is a very strong opiate. She's on 150 milligrams of methadone. It's equivalent to close to 1,500 milligrams of Oxycontin. Very strong dosages of medications. And it was like this point where it was like, what do you want to do? Do you really want to do this, or do you want to stay on this bed? And it's okay, wherever you want to be. We're not going to be in the position to tell you that your pain is something you could live without a med for. It's working within wherever you want to go. And she doubled down and said, this is what I really want to do. And ever since that moment that she made up her mind that that's how she wants to live her life, it's almost like the same pain level transformed into something different. Like the pain level, maybe let's call it a 9, her suffering made it a 12 or a 15. Now the choice of ridding herself of this and saying, no, this is the life I want to live. It's like you could see the burden lift and the pain, the same 9 almost felt like a 5. And so she had the same exact pain, the same clinical diagnosis, but being able to help her from an inflammatory standpoint, her chemistry and all the things we're able to do, and then move away from these medications, you know, she's still walking today. I think it's been almost 6 years. She's not gone back to the wheelchair. She's not gone back to the opiates. She's still on certain medications for kidney disease. She also has asthma. She's on asthma medication, but she's not on opiates. Her mind is clear. She's raising her son. She's walking around, and you know, her suffering of this disease to me is what changed. And part of that was not only feeling better physically, but part of that was a choice that she made. And to me, it was an important choice that really set up the rest of her life. And now we're 6 years later, it set up an entire way of life for her.
Yeah, that's great. Great story. And I think a good illustration of what you do is, again, that mindset is, if I'm going to sit at home, feel, oh, I can't move. If I move, I'm going to have pain. Oh, it's terrible. So that's the life you're going to have, right? And unfortunately, standardized care will tend to get you that advice. Whereas we actually know that actually getting up, moving around, not focusing on the pain, you can do so much more.
Yeah, I mean, they used to think after you do surgery to, you know, rest and immobilize and don't do anything. And now they know you got to get up right away and move. They know that arthritis used to be, no, don't use the hand as much. Now it's no, use the hand. The more you use it, short-term pain for long-term gain. It's going to hurt, but tomorrow it could, you know, you're going to stave this off, this process. So they know that those things are, you know, going to give you pain and struggle, but we now know the end result is going to be positive. So it's almost like if you can push through that and know that going in, and that's where the presentation, the mindset and all that becomes so crucial, because if that's what you believe, then that's what it's going to be. If I'm in that much pain, and her inflammation was off the charts. It wasn't in her head. She had diagnosable conditions, the MRIs, she had stenosis of the spine in addition to this, you know, nerve pain damage and all these things that were happening. So her pain was extremely real. You know, she wasn't, you know, it wasn't psychological. It wasn't a mindset, but the mindset was, how do you want to approach this pain? And how do you want to approach that this is what's happening in your body? And that's the shift that she made.
Yeah. And that's huge. Absolutely huge, because, you know, there's quality. It's not just quantity of life, it's quality of life. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what people want. And it seems to me that that's what you guys are doing, is you're giving people, as you say, unfortunately, you're getting to see them at last in line. Perhaps if you got to them sooner, you'd do even better. But what you're able to do is still give people a tremendous quality of life, even if they have conditions that, you know, can't be fixed or cured.
Yes, and it's about, as I almost said in the beginning of the conversation, like conventional medicine, like this testing that we're running is all from a conventional creed. Like that was made out of, let's call it, Western society's, you know, viewpoint on medicine was how to test these. So we're using that. We're using IV therapy. We use supplementation. We optimize medication. We're not anti-medication. We just think it's overused. So, you know, we're combining what we think to the best of our ability, what is the best pieces of these different medicines, you know, imaging tools, all those are from Western medicine, quote unquote, conventional medicine. And those are really, you know, great things for it. And we're really using almost the body to help the mind out. And we're trying to reduce the inflammation, reduce the burden on the body, reduce overprescribed medications, and then having that be the feedback loop to help you change your thought processes and things that are happening. So people come in and they only change their thought processes, you know, that's one thing. They're still going to be up against this biochemical roadblock. So that's where I think it's really big to do both, you know, and that chicken or the egg conversation to me is irrelevant with chronic illness. Like, did the mind cause the problem in the body? Did the body cause the problem in the mind? At this point, it's irrelevant. They're both happening. Right. They're both factors. They're both contributing. They both need to be helped. So it almost doesn't really matter. The chicken and the egg are both here. Who cares which came first? We need to help them both.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing work, Wyatt. Thank you so much for being on the show. If people want to find out more about the Lifestyle Healing Institute, where can they go?
They can head online to lifestylehealinginstitute.com and check out some information there. And we're also in the process of launching an online platform where we try and make a lot of these methods that we use more available at home and more of a virtual setting. So I'm hoping to be able to get that to people as well and do our best to get this information and empower people to help themselves and their quality of life.
Well, outstanding. Keep up the great work. Expand it. We need to get the word out. Really appreciate what you're doing. And thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me, and let me know if I can come back at some time and keep having conversations. It was a lot of fun. Thanks, Howard.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Miracle Within You. Join me next time when I continue to explore the power of the mind-body and how it can be employed to enhance health and healing.